Welcome along to the preview show, everybody. This week is a tired week here at UTAS Towers. My name's Julian Roberts. I'm joined by Jack Swindlehurst, who reliably informs me he's already fallen asleep once this evening. How are you feeling now, mate?
I'm absolutely fine, mate. I mean, that's quite a regular occurrence on a Thursday. I can have like three or four naps throughout the day. So, you know, being asleep already is not too big a thing.
I mean, it's 10 p.m., right? So I wouldn't even describe it as that late, but you've just told me your bedtime is about 10 o'clock normally. So fair enough. I mean, I suppose in your old age, it does tend to sort of get a bit earlier, doesn't it?
I need to kind of offset it for when the weekend it's a little bit later. You know, it can get towards 11 or even midnight on the weekend.
Yeah, it can. We've taken the leap here, haven't we, Swindle? Because it's 10 p.m. We couldn't even wait another hour to see if the U's were going to sign one extra player. Obviously, it's transfer deadline day this Thursday as we're recording, depending on when people are listening to this, but it's Thursday night, 10 p.m., an hour left of the window. I mean, we think the U's business is done.
The thing is, with our podcast, if we know anything, if we ever so slightly jump the gun, it preempts something to happen. So hopefully we sign someone absolutely amazing.
I was going to say, the biggest encouragement the club need to go and sign a player is realizing that we're recording a podcast before the window is actually slammed shut. So it seems like our business is done. Harris's press conference earlier, which we'll dive into a little bit more later, especially with regards to the Shrewsbury game. But his press conference was quite. It did seem like he sort of said that he wasn't going to sign another player for the sake of signing another player, and that we had a couple of targets that we were going after and still working on. But it wasn't. It didn't scream like imminent signing. But you, whoever's listening to this pod, you might be getting a little add-on around now if something happens and we're dragged out of bed to add on a little 5 minute extra. Okay, but what we do know at this stage is that we have signed one player today, Macaulay Bonn, on loan from Gillingham. A bit of a bigger profile of a name that I was expecting for the second striker. I was sort of expecting to have like a Taylor and then maybe sort of a loanee from higher up as the second one. But we've gone with someone who's a really well-known name in this division. Swindle, what's your thoughts on the loan signing?
Well, it's a name that, everyone in our level of football knows. It's a name that Tom Walker of this parish called for about 5 years ago, pretty much to the day.
When he was actually banging them in at Leyton Orient, to be fair. It was a bit of a shout back then.
Absolutely, but a player who's proven at this level and also who I think could be quite a Neil Harris type of player, you know, get him in, get him playing right type of football. And also, I know obviously Gillingham, aren't quite our level, but the outrage of their fans seeing him come towards us is, you know, probably quite a good thing. I think he could be a really good fit for the team. Just a bit more experience as well. You know, we've shown bringing in experienced players last season. McGrandles always springs to mind. He'd had a bit of experience. But you look at Morrison, you look at Ryan Bennett, and that's how it steadied the ship at this time of year. So bringing in someone with that experience in January could be kind of integral to kind of steadying the ship and staying up the season, I think.
I think also what's interesting for me is he struggled in a couple of spells. So the second spell at Charlton, he only scored 2 in 16. And I think Charlton fans, I'm not saying necessarily like turned on him, but I do think I don't think that was left in the best place. I saw someone say earlier that when he scored at their place for Gillingham, he sort of like celebrated in front of the Charlton fans as it made a bit of a point of it. So I don't think he left on the best of terms. But by the way, the state of Charlton Athletic at the moment, I don't think, like you talk about sort of basket cases, I don't think anyone leaves there on good terms at the moment. But like, you know, I think that massive early promise at Orient where he scored 45 and 90, which is ridiculous. I think that was the season they got promoted out of the conference. He did 2 years there. Then he went to Charlton for the first time, scored about 1 in 3. And by the way, that season, he partnered Lyle Taylor up front in the championship, that is, and they both scored double figures. I think Taylor scored 11 in 22. I don't actually have his figures up in front of me, but great returns, both of them. And they'd have played together a lot that season. So that's a big thing for me, don't you think? Like just sort of developing these partnerships or sort of reigniting these partnerships is probably the big thing.
Absolutely. Like it's fantastic having those two back together. It's brilliant having a manager like Neil Harris who kind of has learned to manage players at this level and above. Also, if you're a striker at this level and you have 10 consistent seasons at this level where you're banging in goals, you're a wanker or you're not really good enough to move up a level. So like, it's good that all of these players have off seasons, are kind of dips and troughs and stuff. Like, it happens. But I think it's brilliant to get Lyle Taylor and Macaulay Bond together. And yeah, I think Neil Harris, you know, I was happy when we got Harris in, and I was a little bit kind of umming and ahhing, but having heard him speak, I heard him on a really good podcast the other day. I can't remember who that was, but yeah, he sounded very good on that. And then, yeah, just generally.
Shit, this is how I am. That took me ages. I was like, fucking hell, what other podcasts have you been on? Took me so long.
That was last. But yeah, I just think that the kind of combination of all these, you know, these players and this manager, I'm really quite encouraged by how we've done our business in this window.
Yeah, 100%. I just also thought, like, I'm not saying that the reaction around Bond has been negative. I think everyone's actually been pretty pleasantly surprised by it. People haven't been like blown away by it, but I think if we make this signing, you know, a year ago, 2 years ago, it's way beyond our expectations, way beyond our dreams. If you think about our forward line now, right? Lyle Taylor, Macaulay Bond, obviously you'll have Fujiria Kanavire and Gassan Ahadmi when they come back from injury, and then Elias Kachunga to sort of support them in behind. Like, the level of experience at the third tier and above, it's kind of wild with M5. It's like, it sort of feels like we're operating in a different, you know, we're shopping at a different supermarket, so to speak, at the moment.
I mean, we genuinely are. And like, it doesn't take you know, to look too far back to see, no offense to the names, but you know, the Ryan Birds, the, you know, the Cunningtons, people like that. And, you know,
important players at the time, mate.
Of course they were. And, you know, don't get me wrong, but it also, you don't have to look too far towards this weekend to the team we were playing in Shrewsbury Town, who haven't made any signings in this transfer window. They brought back an old head who they think probably won't play very much. But other than that, you know, there's teams around us who are really struggling to get anyone in. But I think, you know, a new manager who's a bit of a draw, a bit of kind of financial stability that we have that other teams around us don't, I think we're actually in a bit of a fortunate position, really.
I agree. Shrewsbury actually did loan a centre mid from Brighton today, who definitely will score on Saturday, now that you said that. So yeah, that's good.
Great.
That's good. More on Shrewsbury in a bit. Just to sort of wrap up on that with Bond, I think that's quite an exciting one. It's going to be even just the options. Like, it's going to be fascinating to see if he goes with two up top, or if he's going to stick with having Kachunga in behind, but then he's just got that option of Bond on the bench. Do you think there's anything? I had a thought earlier, Swindle, but he's not going to do this. But like, it is 3-5-2 suddenly does, or 5-3-2, depending on how you want to do it. But, you know, Bennett is a wing back on one side. This James Gibbons that we can talk about in a second, who apparently has played at the right side of a back three, Bennett Morrison, Andrew left back, maybe like Cousins and Thomas. Cousins playing deeper because you've got a load of cover with three centre halves, Thomas pushing forward. And then, like, I don't know, Kachunga and all Bon and Taylor, Kachunga, Kai. He's suddenly got loads of options. Do you know what I mean? I don't know. He's not going to do that. It's Neil Harris. He's obviously going to play four at the back. But I'm just saying, like, what do you think he might do with it?
You can tell recording at, you know, 10 o'clock on a Thursday night, the delirium's got to you.
Yeah, it's madness setting in.
But no, I think it's brilliant. And like, it does kind of highlight the point that we spoke about on the last podcast we were on together. You know, two options from the bench that Neil Harris thought was, you know, were viable for that game. And it kind of exposed how light on the ground we were. And I think just even getting players in like this, we've got a bit of flexibility on how we line up. We've also got a bit of something to do when we need to change a game. Because really, that Burton game, when you're against 10 men, you do need to change it. And for whatever Neil Harris gives his reasons why he didn't want to do it, we made two changes in that game. And that probably cost us 3 points rather than, you know, the one that we had to settle with. So it's just great to have those options. I don't know how we're going to set up. And also, we need to think ahead. We've got a really big game on Tuesday as well. I think Saturday's game against Shrewsbury is massive, especially because of the Tuesday game that follows, given that Shrewsbury, you know, a point above us in the league, and we just need to kind of, I think we need to go for that. But, you know, they've got new manager bounce and are coming off the back of a win as well. So it's going to be a tough one, I think.
The really bizarre thing is I fancy us more against Bolton on Tuesday than I do Shrewsbury.
100%.
Like, our home record's so good that I just fancy us to do something against them. Anyway, the other player we should talk about, who I just mentioned there, that we signed since the last pod, is James Gibbons. This is you know, a player that I didn't know a lot about. I did ask a mate of mine. He's got 111 appearances at Port Vale, where he scored 3 goals. So
your mate does?
Yeah, my mate does. My mate is James Gibbons.
Oh, right.
I asked my mate, who's a Port Vale fan, and James Gibbons, 111 fixed appearances, as I just said, if I wasn't rudely interrupted. and his one line summary was, he was very good in League Two as a right wing back and right centre back in a three, bit injury prone.
It stinks of a Cambridge United signing.
It does a bit, doesn't it?
And James Gibbons feels like a kind of AI generated name for a League One player. But you know, I'll take his word for it. And like you say, he's got appearances under his belt, whether he's injury prone or not, and a bit of versatility in a player like that, especially when we're a bit fluid in how we operate in the back, whether it's in formation or, you know, how we operate game to game and depending who we're playing against. So I just think it's good to have another body on board. I mean, there were some wild rumours flying about Okadina flying the nest towards Stoke.
That's stupid account, though. I think was saying that we were spending $250,000 player on some lad from Accrington that no one's ever heard of. Like, that's never going to happen. Steve Claridge is still on record transfer deal. Do you know what I mean? It's not going to happen anyway.
But I just love to see it. But yeah, it's nice to have a kind of bit of depth there. And yeah, a versatile player like that. You know, Harris, as you say, probably quite rigid as far as the back five goes, including the goalkeeper. But yeah, it's nice to have someone there who kind of throw his hat into the ring and give Bennett a bit of a run for his money too.
I think that's it. That's what Harris was saying in his press conference. He said, like, he just needs Bennett's a brilliant player. Like, he made quite a big point of saying how important a player for us Liam Bennett is, but it's the one area of the pitch where we didn't have adequate cover. So obviously Okadina doesn't, he's not considered a right back in Harris's book, which is maybe fair enough. But Gibbons' description of his playing style on Wikipedia is quite funny. Gibbons is right back. He can also fill in at left back and has been described as a little terrier by former manager Rob Page. That does sound quite a lot like Liam Bennett, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It does sound quite a lot like how a lot of people might describe Liam Bennett. So we might have a bit of a copy there. But I think good cover there. And look, Twindle, here's a big question to wrap up on the window. If, you know, it's 10 past 10 now, I'm just refreshing the Twitter just before I ask this. Let's say that's the window. Lara Taylor, Macaulay Bond, two strikers and a right back, James Gibbons. You happy with that? Would you have taken that on the 1st of Jan?
Probably, yes. I would have done. Yeah, it's difficult and hindsight's easy to say. I feel like we kind of came into January thinking we were going to kind of go quite quick into the window. We never do that as a team, Cambridge United. So we were waiting and waiting. And, you know, Lyle Taylor, a bit of a marquee signing, really. And obviously, you know, shines on his debut and looks really sharp. And I think that's a really good signing. I think Bond kind of brings us through this looking pretty well, to be honest. That's a great signing to make on deadline day. And it just sets us up with some real experience and goals. You know, we've lacked goals. And also with injuries around that area of the park, we've now kind of almost spoiled for choice when everyone comes back. So I think that's kind of a happy thing to have. I do worry about what you just mentioned, you know, Gibbons maybe being not a carbon copy of Liam Bennett, but similar. We still might be lacking a bit of physicality back there. But generally, looking at other teams around us as well, I know people kind of brought in a few loan players and things like that and brought a few players back off loan. But I think, yeah, I think we can be quite happy with what we've done and keep these players fit and get them into the squad. And yeah, I think we should be pretty happy. I think a 7 out of 10, I would give it.
Yeah, I'd maybe go a step further. I think everyone potentially, I think it's a really good window. I think I'm sort of copying what Harris said, to be a perfect window to get into maybe like a 9. There was maybe one more, right? It sounds like we missed out on a couple. I'm sure we went. Oh, also make this point. I think someone made it on the message board that I was avidly reading. I forgot what deadline day is like. Like, I was just sort of refreshing random threads today, like constantly refreshing Twitter, and like, not the top 20s coverage was brilliant on their Substack. So I was sort of just all over the place, just looking at all the coverage today. But someone made a great point on the message board, which was like, obviously we're always quite insular, right? Because we follow our own club so like religiously and so deeply that we obviously see Harris, who has been incredibly honest, by the way, it's probably something that is worth talking about as well. Him saying that we've missed out on deals sort of for the last couple of weeks. He's been saying that when it's happened, but you forget that other teams are probably missing out on deals as well. Right. It's just sort of the way it goes. And like, some managers will just keep it behind closed doors and others won't. And it might feel like we're sort of, I don't think it's as simple as feeling like we've been shafted at all.
I think being back in the Football League, Neil Harris is the first manager that we've had that is able to be in that position. He's experienced enough, and it's not to do with respect or gravitas or anything, but he knows having been in a few football clubs, that these things happen. And I think he feels like he's able to explicitly say when we don't land on a player or we spend some time. You know, he spoke when he was on the pod about kind of hoping to get people through the door before the Burton game. It didn't happen. And I think the managers we've had in the Football League, you look at Calderwoods, you look at Joe Dunne, you obviously look at Bono, you know, his first job. And managers like that probably didn't feel like they had the kind of wherewithal to say that, you know, that, you know, you kind of have to work with the club. Obviously, it's behind the scenes. There's a lot of people involved in it. And I think he's probably one that can say, yeah, we've gone for this. It's not worked out. And yeah, a bit more clarity for the fans. And I think, yeah, that kind of translates into how people have received how we're doing this window. Although, if you look to this morning when we hadn't signed anyone, the base was going insane.
I am properly glad that we announced Bond nice and early today just to settle nerves, because it's been, this fourth one has felt like a sort of luxury extra. And I think that's sort of how Harris is viewing it. If you listen to this quote from his presser, he says, "McCauley got agreed yesterday and I went to bed last night. Happy that I thought we had four. By the time I went to sleep, we had three. So I didn't quite go to sleep as quickly as I thought I would." So clearly he did want that fourth player. Interesting to know who that would have been. I mean, there were rumours flying around about Alex Mighton, who ended up at Port Vale, which timing-wise might have made sense. But look, who knows? Anyway, yeah, I'd agree with the seven. I think a seven's good. I think we've definitely strengthened in the right areas of the pitch. And you think, like, Thomas coming back this Saturday, potentially, you know, it's, suddenly there's a few selection issues and a really strong bench, which is no bad thing leading into such a busy month. Let's move on to talking about Shrews, shall we? Because this is a preview show after all. Let's start by getting a preview. This is from Salopcast.
Right then, news fans, I'm joined by Dan from Salopcast. Dan, thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Good to be here.
Brilliant. And interesting match coming up with Shrewsbury and Cambridge, basically in the exactly the same position in the table. 1 point clear of us, you are in 15th. How's the season been so far?
It's been up and down, I think is the most positive way I can describe it. We had a new coach at the beginning of the season, Matt Taylor, once of Portsmouth. Came in with some big ideas. We were going to have a fresh identity. We were going to try and keep the ball. We were going to pass it. We were going to be good to watch. Didn't do any of that. We were very, very dull. Didn't score many goals at all. And we sort of mastered the art of either winning 1-0 or getting beat 4-0. So it was a hard watch. And over Christmas, we did really poorly. We were awful at Cheltenham and lost. We were even worse at Burton and lost. And Taylor ultimately was sacked about 10 days ago. And much as I'm sure Matt Taylor is a very nice guy, I don't think there were too many people who were thinking it was the wrong call. So new manager come in. And of course, the new manager from our perspective is the Messiah. It's Paul Hurst. Now I've got 2 8-year-old boys. And I think if I'd have said we've got Pep Guardiola, they'd have been more disappointed than if we got Paul Hurst, because he took us to the playoff one final in 2018. He also came in 2017 and got us out of a relegation hodgepodge. So he's come back. He's only had one game in charge. It went pretty well. And it's very much changed the vibe around the club moving forward.
Well, yeah, absolutely. As you said, December was difficult to say the least. And obviously you've had some tough games in January against some top teams, but a win to open the year up. And as you say, last time out, 2-0 at Northampton. How was that game?
Yeah, well, it was, I mean, if Taylor had been in charge, it's one of those games where I just couldn't have seen us getting anything out of it. But we went to a back four rather than our back five that we played under Taylor, played 4-3-3, and you got an extra man in the middle of the park. So we kept the ball a little bit better. And, you know, there was a feel-good factor in the away end. You know, way more fans travelled than would normally travel, simply because the new manager was in charge. And it's undoubtedly the best, in terms of the football we played, performance of the season. So, yeah, it was a real plus on Saturday. And, we were pleased with more or less everything about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a great result. Not an easy place to go always. And certainly one that you needed. Northampton now in ninth. So, yeah, a good result for sure. So you're, you know, 6 points clear of the relegation zone. We're five. Is your aim really from now on, you know, with Paul Hurst in charge, to kind of just guarantee safety and see the season through?
Yeah, I mean, the realistic amongst us, you know, football fans aren't always realistic at all. But the realistic amongst us, said straight at the start, is Operation 20 Points. We were on 30. We needed, so we want 20 points. To be honest, I think a couple fewer than that will still stay up this season, but we want 20 points. As soon as we got 20 points, then the season is effectively, in a positive sense, over. So the sooner we can get there, the better. I mean, we won't play like we did on Saturday every week. Again, we've got to be realistic, but I'm hopeful that we'll get to that 20 points a little bit before the final day, because we have a bit of a track record of going to the final day with these things.
Yeah, that's always terrifying. We know that.
I was going to say. I'm sure you're well aware.
Before we talk about the squad, I imagine this might be a quick conversation, as you alluded to at the start of our chat. Transfer window is coming to a close. What has activity been like for the Shrews in the transfer window?
Should we move on to the next question straight away? There's been nothing. There's tumbleweed blowing down the streets of Shropshire. There's nothing at all. A few of our loan players, we've mastered the art of signing loan players who then get permanently injured. So we've let two of them go. We had five loan players before Christmas. Four of them were basically injured all the time. That's, you know, I'm not dissing them, but it's like a statement of fact. So we've let some of those loan players go back. We're recording on Thursday afternoon, last day of the transfer window. And I mean, there are still rumours going round that we may sign a lad from Brighton, for example, but nothing has gone. The only thing that has happened is we've got one of our players back from Sutton United, Aidan O'Brien, who's a name people might remember, but that Aidan O'Brien doesn't exist anymore. I'd be absolutely amazed if he played against Cambridge on Saturday, but he is back. He is training with the squad. And in that sense, he's a new face. The other loanee that we've had come back, a guy from Morecambe, Tom Block. So he's been away all season. He's a young lad. He's done pretty well at Morecambe, and it's a proper sort of loan situation. He's gone down a division. He's got some game time. He played on Saturday. He'll probably play again. But in terms of new faces, not a lot to say.
Well, it's an interesting one, and yeah, we've made a couple, but it's the proof is in the pudding, as they say. So let's look at the players that you have got on the squad. Give us a couple of players who we should look out for. You know, maybe a couple of forwards, but also further down the field.
Yep, I think there's two names that I'd flag up. One's had an average season so far and the other's been rubbish, but they work together well. They used to play for Coventry. That's Tom Bayliss and Jordan Shipley. And I think there's two things with those. They're both forward-looking players. One's right-footed, one's left-footed. They played an awful lot of football together and they were throttled under Matt Taylor. They just never got the ball. It was all just whacked over their heads. So it looks like they should be getting much more of the ball, and they need it. Otherwise, they won't be able to have any impact on the game. So Jordan Shipley will be out left somewhere. He's one to keep an eye on. He crosses a decent ball. And Bayliss he's a sort of number 10. He's got more more on the ground, and he's got a few tricks up his sleeve. So we're hoping that they will continue what they showed last Saturday and be sort of the force through which any attacks that we might have might come.
Absolutely. An interesting matchup. And as we say, so clear in the table, so close in the table with each other, and yeah, not much to pick between goals scored or goals conceded. Just give the listeners a little bit of an idea of how the Shrews might set up and what style of football we might be able to expect on Saturday.
Yeah, well, not as dull as in previous weeks, if that helps. So you shouldn't be falling asleep. There's a bit more going on. I'm pretty sure we'll go 4-3-3. So we've been 3-5-2 all season, but the two wing-backs in question were just never able to get out. So it's been a very defensive setup. With the back four, we've just got that extra player forward. Carl Winchester will probably be in the middle. He used to be at Sunderland. He may be a name that folks know. And if he can get his foot on the ball, then the 4-3-3 has got much more potential to keep the ball, to move forward as a unit, and to create one or two chances. There's also our centre forward's been out for about 6 weeks. Dan Adoh, in my mind, he's a little bit hit and miss, but he's definitely a fan favourite, and he did score at the weekend. So keep an eye for him as the out and out number nine, because he's the pivot around which moves going forward will also hinge.
Absolutely, yeah, certainly an interesting one. We had a meeting back in October. It was a 1-1 draw, and United conceding late in that one.
Well, I felt really, really sorry for you guys there, to be honest, because our pattern was very much, once we go behind, it's good night Vienna. We never get back in the game. So most of us were utterly amazed when we scored. It was 85th minute, wasn't it? Something like that. It was Taylor Perry. We didn't see it coming, which doesn't help you at all, does it? But I thought I'd let you know.
Well, I appreciate that as well. But yeah, it could be a similar game on Saturday. If you had to push you, what would be your prediction for Saturday scoreline?
Oh, I'm rubbish at this. But I think we are generally much better at home than away. So that's one thing. And also there's a bit of a positive vibe with Paul Hurst coming back into the fold. And it's our first game at home since Hurst has come back. So obviously I'm going to predict that we win, but you know, football often smacks you in the face. So, you know, 1-0 Cambridge is just as likely as well, but I'm reasonably confident going into this one. So I think it'll be close. I think Cambridge, from what I know of your side, I don't think, you know, you come to fight, you come to scrap, you're not going to give us anything. And that's right, because you're in the same position as us. So if push comes to shove, I'm going to go 2-1 Solihull.
I like that. Yeah, at least you're not sitting on the fence. Quite often I have to sit on the fence because I don't really know what I'm doing. But yeah, it's been absolutely brilliant.
That's almost certainly the one score that won't happen now, as long as we're clear on that.
Oh, brilliant. Well, hopefully it doesn't. But listen, Dan, thanks for joining us. That's been really good to hear from you.
My pleasure.
Thanks very much for that, Dan. And thanks very much to Indel, obviously, for spending time having a chat to Dan today. What was your reflections on that conversation? How are you feeling going into Saturday?
It's an interesting one. I mean, we're so kind of equal as it stands in the table and how our seasons have gone. They had they've been indifferent all season. They've not particularly had a good run. It's really been up and down. They had Matty Taylor as their manager, who promised a brand of football that he really didn't bring. You know, they're really shy on goals. And they've been kind of just struggling all season, got knocked out of the FA Cup by Wrexham. Had a poor run in December, really poor run. A big win on New Year's Day, but then since then they've been up and down. Matty Taylor got sacked. They brought back in Paul Hurst, who is a hero for them on about two or three counts. He's kept them up and then also got them promoted. They absolutely love him. Won his first game in charge away at Northampton, so their tails are up. I think they're goal shy. They've not really done much in the transfer window either, but they have got a fairly large squad. So I think Hurst will be the man, much like Neil Harris coming into Cambridge, who can kind of get the best out of the players that he's got. I think Saturday will be a really tight game, because I think whilst they want to go for it, I think they're pretty leaky defensively like we are.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, it'll be an interesting kind of battle of wits. But I think Harris going there, it's a long trip, and I think Harris probably will kind of want to go for it from the off.
Yeah, I reckon. I think especially with that sort of forward reinforcement. I was just looking at the goal stats from this season. I mean, they're the joint lowest scorers in the whole league on 20. I mean, granted, that's only three less than us, so it's not exactly anything that we should be laughing too much at. They have conceded 39 though, so their goal difference is 9 worse than ours. So you can tell where they go wrong. I think there was a mad stat recently that I really should have looked up, that they hadn't scored in a game. Like, when they scored, they won the game, basically. 1-0, essentially. Or like, anytime they scored, they didn't drop points or something like that. It was like they'd only score one goal a game, but when they did, they would win or wouldn't lose that game. So it seems like the sort of thing where, like, they're pretty good in those situations at shutting up shop. If you manage to get ahead early, you can potentially sort of override them. But they might be a different beast now that Hurst is there, because obviously he's got them going again a little bit. Well, one game in. But yeah.
Well, it's true. But on the flip side of that, if they concede first, they generally don't score. So, like, it's that type.
Yeah, that's what. Yeah, exactly. You
know, they're all nothing. So, yeah, I think that's why Harris will look at that and he'll want to go for them. I think a win at Northampton with the new manager is good, but probably could be a bit of a flash in the pan. I don't think it's kind of a complete resurgence. So, yeah, I think we should be going for them, really.
Yeah, Northampton obviously had an excellent season, so it looks good when you look at the table. But I'm not sure Northampton, like, are the strongest. They're probably sort of slightly above where they naturally should be.
So, yeah, Dan just referenced it in that interview that game under Matty Taylor would have been a 0-0. You know, the team looked like getting it, and, you know, somehow kind of the Shrews pulled through. But yeah, I don't think they were kind of all over it. I think it was a smash and grab more than anything.
It does strike me like a bad time to play them.
It strikes
me like a really bad moment. First home game back with a sort of returning legend. It doesn't strike me like the greatest moment. And I think the frustration as well is like the leg at the Abbey, where obviously Morris managed to score that brilliant goal, that should have been all 3 points for us. And you saw that lack of ability of theirs to get back into a game, and it was literally put on a plate for them at the end, which was why that was so frustrating.
Also referencing the interview, and basically, Dan just said, we were so unlucky that game and they didn't deserve anything. But equally, you look at games where we'd be, you know, looking to be really happy to play a team. Cheltenham this season, for example, we don't do particularly well in those games. So, you know, I think with Harris in charge, I don't think he really looks at games like it's a good or a bad time to play a team. You just take a team as they are and then go for it.
And you know, over the course of the season, this is the same opinion I have with referees, that, like, it levels itself out. You'll play a team at a bad time at some stage. So, like, you just, it doesn't really matter. You just, if you're good enough, you're good enough. Right. So, In terms of injuries, I think Thomas is the big one. Harris in his press conference said George has trained this week, so touch wood, it stays that way over the course of the next 24 hours and he's available for the weekend. Sounds like probably won't throw him into a starting lineup there. What do you think he's going to do? Do you think he might just actually go unchanged?
I mean, yeah, the thing that I found with United this season, not just with Harris in charge, but generally, it's so hard to predict how we're going to line up. In a, you know, we've had a few injuries, you know, with the likes of, you know, Kai Kai and Janna hit the ground running at the start of the season. And there's just been a real lack of consistency. We've had May coming back and we've spoken on the pod about how he's just not kind of found his former form. Jack Lancaster just hasn't been able to get, you know, the form that he needs. Brophy may have been one of the most consistent, but it's really difficult to kind of call out. And that thick game of runs that we would have had with a couple of postponements hasn't been as kind of torrid as we might have thought. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see, you know, the same team go out. But equally, is there an argument for, you know, throwing Bonner at the deep end or Will Gibbons maybe even come in and play?
Yeah, potentially. Maybe give Bennett that little rest. Bonnie's ready to go though. You know, he's been playing week in, week out, so might maybe throw him straight in. I guess he hasn't had a lot of time with the lads on the grass. So maybe needs a little bit more time for that. But we'll see. It's gonna be interesting. I've actually got a feeling he's gonna go unchanged, to be honest, and sort of leave the options on the bench to be able to change things more than anything, because I think he backs the team that started on Saturday to be solid enough with a bit of a threat on the break. And here's one, Swindle. Would you take 0-0, 3 0-0s in a row?
I think ahead of Tuesday, probably not.
Must win?
I think so, yeah. Just given where they are, because if we lose this game to them and suddenly they've kind of, you know, propelled themselves 4 points clear of us and they're 8 or 9 clear of the relegation zone, suddenly that's another team that we need to catch rather than a team to kind of keep up with. And I think obviously a 0-0 keeps us up with them, but then, you know, if we can leapfrog them, it kind of gives a bit of impetus going into Tuesday. And like you said about Tuesday, it's almost more likely that we'll win on Tuesday than we will on Saturday. But I think, imagine winning Saturday and drawing Tuesday, it would be so positive. And those 0-0s that we've had suddenly wouldn't, you know, would look like to build on.
I agree. I think I would take it though. I think I'd take it because the thing is, I think then we've got, you're right about Tuesday, but then you look at the Saturday after. Now I know it puts a lot of pressure on it, but Cheltenham at home on the Saturday after, like, say you can get a positive result this against Shrewsbury and Bolton, then you go into that Cheltenham game, you're suddenly looking at going 5 unbeaten, take 3 points against Cheltenham, and I think we'd be in a really strong position. We've also got 2 games in hand on a lot of teams right around us. Obviously, that doesn't mean 6 points, but it's an extra opportunity.
It's just a worry, you know, we've met Cheltenham once already this season, we know what happened there. You know, these games in hand are all very well, but I think, you know, games in hand can be a detriment if you concede 2 goals in each of them in -4 and 0 points. So, like, it's a double-edged sword, really. But I mean, both sides of the argument have, you know, validation. But I just feel a win on Saturday could really kind of propel us. And then it would be very Cambridge United to go and win again on Tuesday and suddenly, you know, be looking up and not down. But I just feel like where we're at and where they're at, I feel like with the players we brought in, it'd be good to try and go for this and use those forward acquisitions that we got, really.
Yeah, absolutely. What's your prediction then?
3-0 Shrewsbury. No, I think it'll be a tight game, and I do think I think both teams will kind of go for it to a point. So I think it could be, you know, 1-1 at half time and a late winner for United. But I think it'll be a proper edgy game. Won't be much fun to watch.
It's worth mentioning. The last time we went there last year was that terrible 5-1 defeat, and before that we lost 4-1 up there, which was when I think Iredale got sent off for a bit of a, or was it May? I can't remember off the top of my head. It was one of the two of them. Can't remember. I'm gonna have to find out now, like live on the pod. But someone got sent off in that game, and it was a bit of a dodgy decision from what I remember. Brilliant. I type in Shrewsbury 4 Cambridge 1, it comes up with 4 Shrewsbury Road in Cambridge. So it was, mate. It was May and Iredale scored a screamer. So I think you can give me my confusion there.
Yeah, well done, mate.
Anyway, so our form there, what I'm trying to say, it's not very good in the past couple of visits, but I do remember Sully Kaikai scoring a last minute equaliser up there. So, you know, never know what sort of what's going to happen. I think we might draw 1-1. That's my prediction. And I think I would probably take it, to be honest.
I completely agree with the draw chat, and I can completely understand that we might go up there. I do feel that there's been a conversation about Neil Harris's approach to games and how he's managing Cambridge United. And I just feel like this might be one of those away days where his kind of shrewdness as an experienced manager might come into play, and he might just be able to kind of grind this one out. And I've got a cautious optimism about it, which is never good for a Cambridge United fan. But yeah, I just feel like it might want to kind of, yeah, grind this one out for us.
Fingers crossed, mate. Let's wrap this up. Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. We really should have, you've just written in the chat.
It's also just so funny that this is it. Like
this is the way that we're announcing it. That this is the 200th episode of Under the Abbey Stand. That is a pretty remarkable way to get to your double century.
Ten on a Thursday night after just.
Yeah. Are we going to mention it's the 200th episode? Yeah, I guess so. I guess we will. Well done, Swindle. Any good memories that you want to share?
Yeah, mate, all of them. They're all just so good. I mean, I tell you what, the memories about the pod are generally about what's happened whilst we've been doing the pod. Pod memories are great. Mm. I think probably one of the best, and one that I always think back to, oddly, is the first ever episode we recorded in the studio at 105. Me, you, Matt Ramsey, Tom Walker sat in a tiny little studio. I export the file wrong from the podcast. And we have to record it all again in about 40 degree heat. And I was just like, I've probably messed this up. This probably isn't going to ever happen again. And here we are.
And it has happened a few times. So not all your fault. I should have sacked you there and then, mate.
And here we are. 5 years down the line, two lost awards. And
yeah, I know.
A lot of lost sales.
Yeah. I have a good memory, and actually it was one that happened on Monday, and it's a perfect time to plug the interview with Neil Harris that me and Joe did, which was I think one of my favorite memories of the pod, because it was so nice to be able to spend a good amount of time face to face with United manager, which unfortunately is something we actually never got to do with Bonner for initially because of COVID, and then I think by then it sort of felt like we were into the swing of things a bit more. So this was a bit more of a sort of welcome interview for a new manager, which hopefully doesn't happen anytime soon, because obviously things have gone a bit wrong if we're doing it anytime soon. But it was really, really nice to chat to Neil. You can listen to that on your podcast feeds. It will just be the one before this episode. Really interesting hour or so spent with him. Such a fascinating bloke, and had an amazing career, and he's got some really good plans with the U's. And I think the way he spoke was really, really good, and I think the feedback's been great. So thank you everyone who's sent any feedback in and given it a listen. Do subscribe to Under the Abbey Stand, and do subscribe to our new Substack, which is live now. That's www.undertheabbeystand.com. That's our website, and every post will drop into your email inbox handily. It's all free, and there'll be articles sort of every other day, I think, over the next for the rest of the season. So yeah, Swindle, this has been a pleasure. Happy 200th episode.
Happy 200th, mate. Here's to 200 more.
Here's to Cambridge United signing a player in the next half an hour. But anyway, hopefully not obviously for our sake. For now anyway, we'll leave you with Adam Terasevich and his January roundup of the Cambridge United women's team.
So winter's been a bit of a barren wilderness fixture-wise for Cambridge's women's team. Through 2 months, we've seen just 4 matches. Doesn't mean there's nothing to talk about, but this could be a bit of a quicker summary than normal. Way back when in December, the only match of the month saw United lose 2-1 to Worthing. First minute goal from Alicia Stoiko down gave a great start, and Lauren Webb saved a Worthing penalty later on in the first half, so it was definitely going Cambridge's way until around the hour mark, when Worthing equalised and scored in the space of about 5 minutes. They went on to take all 3 points, and United finished 2023 on a loss. They had a chance to make up for it starting the new year away at Haywards Heath, the league's bottom club. Things didn't quite go to plan. United led twice, Bella Simmons breaking away from the defence to give United the lead. Haywards Heath equalised only for Alicia Stoiko down to think she'd won it with a couple of minutes to go, but the home side equalised about as late on as you can get in added time. pretty an annoying one to drop points in, especially after retaking the lead so late. And it means United haven't won in three league games. They've lost a bit of ground on the top sides. They're still solidly mid-table and they are doing better than they were this time last year, though. Whilst Cambridge have played in four league games, they've only finished three this winter, and that's because the match against Norwich City had to be abandoned after a serious injury to United's left-back, Brooke Chil-Ferris. She went down with about 5 minutes to go. The score was 3-2 to Norwich, but that hardly mattered in the end. Despite worries that her leg might have been broken, it was later announced that it wasn't, but some serious tissue damage means it could be a while until we see her again. I do wish her all the best in her recovery, and it seems the team who dealt with her were very professional as well. They got a thank you from the club. I saw that this also reached the message board, so if anyone's seeking an update and has maybe missed it, this is what's happened. I've been waiting and waiting to hear what the decision would be about the game. I finally saw it mentioned on the Norwich's website yesterday that the FAWNL board have judged the game will be replayed in full at a yet unknown date. This could seem harsh on Norwich, the game being so far through and then winning, but the rules are that the full 90 minutes has to be completed, and the same decision was actually made about a third tier game abandoned the week before between Derby County and Liverpool Feds for exactly the same reason. On a slightly brighter note about the Norwich game, congratulations to Serena Cobb, who made her first team debut in the game, although it's a bit of a shame that it will be remembered for quite a different reason. Finally, the user in cup action. There returns to the National League plate competition with a trip to Maidenhead United this last weekend. A match which ended in a fantastic win for Cambridge, sending them through to the semi-finals. Fairly even sort of game. Ultimately, it was decided by a penalty apiece. One in the first half, Maidenhead had the penalty saved by Lauren Webb. Once again, another penalty saved this winter. I'm pretty sure she's got three or four this season as well. And then in the second half, Alicia Stoico down, fouled by the Maidenhead keeper. She stepped up herself and continued her amazing form, gave United the lead, and they are into the semi-finals. Welcome back to Harley Jean Simpson too, United's number 10, who made her return after an injury which has kept her out for about 4 months. And Cambridge will play Barnsley in the next round. They're the same level as Cambridge, but they are currently top of the Northern League division. I think Exeter are top of their league as well, and Derby play third tier football. So Cambridge, perhaps underdogs in the competition, but it's great to see how they've improved over the last year. Nice to see them in the final four of a National Cup competition. The next round will be played at home at St Neots at the end of February. But first attention must turn to this weekend, where United will have a tough trip to Plough Lane, where they'll play top of the table Wimbledon.